A sloth, a donkey, and a curious human. Send a prompt and see what they're doing. One hits a record with a question on his mind. Two brothers pick it up, see what they find. Corn takes his time, Herman's got the facts. Back and forth, they never hold back. My weird prompts, come on in, that's where we begin. My weird prompts, glad you're here.
This episode was generated using artificial intelligence. Please verify facts.
Daniel sent us this one. He wants to talk about bridge cameras. You know, that category of camera most people walk right past at the electronics store. The one that looks like a DSLR but has a lens permanently fused to the body. He's asking what makes them distinct, whether they work for video, what the integrated ultra-zoom lens actually means for real-world shooting, specifically for nature, wildlife, anything where you need serious reach without hauling around a telescope-sized lens. So let's get into it.
The number that always stops me cold. The Nikon P1000 has 125 times optical zoom. That is 24 to 3000 millimeters equivalent. You can photograph the moons of Jupiter with this thing. And the lens is bolted to the camera. You buy the camera, you buy the lens, they are one object forever.
Which sounds like a limitation until you realize that a 3,000mm lens for a full-frame camera doesn't exist as a single piece of glass you can actually buy. And if it did, it would cost as much as a car and require its own tripod and possibly its own zip code.
The moons of Jupiter, Corn. I've seen the photos. Little dots lined up around the planet, shot from someone's backyard with a $1,000 camera. That is genuinely astonishing. And yet most people have never heard of the P1000, or if they have, they think of it as a gimmick. The camera that zooms to the moon, which undersells the entire category.
Bridge cameras are the forgotten middle child. You've got smartphones in everyone's pocket doing computational magic, mirrorless systems with interchangeable lenses for the enthusiasts and pros. And then there's this weird category sitting between them that most reviewers don't know what to do with. But for a specific set of people, birders, wildlife photographers, astrophotography hobbyists, a bridge camera might be the single smartest purchase they can make.
The defining feature is that integrated lens. It's not just a long zoom, it's a lens that cannot be removed, which changes everything about how the camera is designed. The engineers can tune the sensor and the optics as one system. They can place stabilization elements exactly where they need them. They can seal the entire optical path so no dust ever touches the sensor.
Which for someone shooting in a dusty blind at dawn waiting for a warbler to show up, that matters. No lens swaps, no sensor cleaning, no moment where you missed the shot because you were fumbling with glass.
Let's define the category properly. The term bridge originally meant it bridges the gap between a point-and-shoot compact and a DSLR or mirrorless system. You get a body with a hand grip, an electronic viewfinder, full manual controls, raw shooting capability, but the lens is fixed. You cannot swap it.
The thing that makes the category interesting now, in a world where smartphones have eaten point and shoots entirely, is the ultra zoom. Bridge cameras exist because they can do something no phone can do. Optical zoom at 60 times, 80 times, 125 times magnification. That's the reason the category survives.
The lineage matters here. In 2015, Nikon released the Coolpix P900 with an 83 times optical zoom, 24 to 2000 millimeters equivalent. That camera went viral. People were posting moonshots, shots of distant buildings where you could read the signage from blocks away. Then in 2018, Nikon pushed it further with the P1000, 125 times optical, 24 to 3000 millimeters. That is still, 8 years later, the record holder for optical zoom in a consumer camera.
The P1000 is not a small object. The lens barrel extends to about the size of a soda can. It weighs over 3 pounds. This is a specialized instrument.
Which is exactly the point Daniel's getting at. He mentioned shooting natural views and wildlife, situations where you can't walk closer. The bird is in a tree across a marsh. The eagle's nest is 200 meters up a cliff face. The moon is, well, the moon. In all those scenarios, the question isn't, what's the best image quality I can get? It's, can I get the shot at all?
That's the lens through which bridge cameras make sense. They're not trying to compete with a full-frame Sony A1 and a 600mm f4 prime. That setup costs $18,000 and weighs 10 pounds. A used P900 costs $300. The bridge camera democratizes extreme telephoto.
To Daniel's specific questions, yes, the ultra zoom lens is absolutely integrated. That's the whole point. The lens is the camera. And yes, they absolutely do video. The P1000 shoots 4K at 30 frames per second, though there's a catch. A 1.5 times crop factor that pushes your effective focal length even further to about 4500 millimeters equivalent, which is either a feature or a problem depending on what you're trying to film.
We'll get into the video specifics later. But first, I want to understand the engineering. How do you actually build a 125x zoom lens that doesn't collapse under its own optical compromises?
The P1000's lens is 14 elements in 10 groups, 5 ED elements and 1 super ED element. ED stands for extra low dispersion, glass that corrects for chromatic aberration, the color fringing you get when different wavelengths of light don't focus at the same point. At 3000 millimeters, without that correction, you'd get purple halos around everything.
Chromatic aberration gets worse the more you push the zoom range, because you're bending light harder through more glass elements.
The engineering challenge is that every time you add zoom range, you add glass, you add weight, and you introduce more surfaces where light can scatter or reflect internally. Nikon's solution was to design the lens and sensor as a single optical system. They could place the rear element extremely close to the sensor because there's no lens mount in between, no air gap for a mirror box or mechanical shutter assembly. That lets them control light fall off at the edges of the frame in ways you simply can't with an interchangeable lens.
The fact that the lens is bolted on isn't a cost-cutting move. It's the thing that makes the zoom possible at all.
This is where people get confused about what a bridge camera is versus a super zoom compact. A super zoom compact, like the old Canon PowerShot SX series, those had similar zoom ranges, sometimes 40 or 50 times, but they were pocket-sized, no viewfinder, no RAW support, tiny controls. A bridge camera has the ergonomics and feature set of an enthusiast camera. The P1000 has a fully articulating screen, an electronic viewfinder with eye sensor, a mode dial with full PASM control, a hot shoe for an external flash or microphone. It shoots RAW. It's a serious photographic tool that happens to have a lens you can't remove.
Versus a mirrorless camera with a telephoto lens. There, you can swap glass. You can upgrade the body independently. You get a much larger sensor. But you also can't get to 3,000 millimeters. A 600 millimeter lens on a Micro Four Thirds body with a 2x crop factor gets you to 1,200 millimeters equivalent. That's less than half the P1000's reach, and it'll cost you thousands.
The P1000 sensor is a 1 over 2.3-inch CMOS. That's tiny. 6.17 millimeters by 4.55 millimeters. For context, a full-frame sensor is 36 by 24 millimeters. So the P1000 sensor has about 1/30th the surface area of full-frame. That's the trade. You get absurd reach because the small sensor crops the image circle dramatically. The 3,000mm equivalent is really a 539mm actual lens projecting onto a tiny sensor. The crop factor does the rest.
Which is why you can hold it in your hands, instead of mounting it on a truck.
That tiny sensor is where the real-world trade-offs start to bite. 16 megapixels on a 1 over 2.3-inch sensor means the individual photosites are minuscule, about 1.1 microns across. A full-frame, 24-megapixel sensor has photosites around 6 microns. That's roughly 25 times more light-gathering area per pixel.
Which means the full-frame camera is collecting dramatically more photons per pixel in the same exposure time. At dawn or dusk, when wildlife is actually active, the bridge camera is starving for light while the big sensor is just getting warmed up.
Small photosites mean higher noise. When you raise the ISO to compensate for low light, you're amplifying noise along with the signal. The P1000 tops out at ISO 6400, but anything above ISO 800 starts looking rough. Noise reduction smears detail, and at 3000 millimeters, you need every bit of detail you can get because atmospheric haze is already softening the image.
You've got a camera that can reach out and touch a heron at 300 meters, but only if the sun is up and the air is clear. Overcast morning in a forest? You're fighting the sensor physics.
This is where the Sony RX10 Mark IV makes a fascinating counter-argument. It's a bridge camera that trades reach for sensor quality, 24 to 600 millimeters equivalent, so only 25 times zoom. But it uses a 1-inch sensor, which has about 4 times the surface area of the P1000's chip, 20 megapixels with much larger photo sites. You get cleaner images at higher ISOs, better dynamic range, and, crucially, it has phase detect autofocus.
Which the P1000 does not. The P1000 uses contrast detect autofocus only. Explain why that matters at extreme focal lengths.
Contrast. Detect AF works by hunting. The camera racks the focus back and forth, analyzing the image to find where contrast is highest. At 24 millimeters, this is fast enough. At 3,000 millimeters, the depth of field is razor thin even at f8, and the lens elements have to move a lot further physically, so the camera hunts. If you're trying to lock focus on a bird against a cloudy sky, a low contrast scene, it can hunt for seconds. The bird is gone.
Phase detect, by contrast, splits the incoming light and measures whether the two beams are in phase. It knows instantly which direction to move the focus and by how much.
The RX10 Mark IV has 315 phase detect points on the sensor. It locks focus in about 0.03 seconds. For birds in flight, for any moving wildlife, that's the difference between a keeper and a blur. The P1000 can do static subjects beautifully, perched birds, the moon, distant landscapes. But tracking a moving subject at extreme zoom, that's not its strength.
Which brings us to stabilization. 3,000 millimeters is an absurd focal length. The angle of view is about 0.8 degrees. If your hand tremors by a fraction of a millimeter, the frame jumps.
Nikon's solution is something they call dual detect vibration reduction. It combines sensor shift stabilization with lens-based optical stabilization. The two systems talk to each other, and Nikon rates the combined system for 4 stops of correction. That means, if you'd normally need a shutter speed of 1 over 3,000th of a second to handhold at that focal length, in theory you could shoot at about 1 over 200th.
In theory being the operative phrase. I've seen people try to handhold the P1000 at full zoom. It looks like they're filming an earthquake.
Even with dual detect VR, at 3,000 millimeters, your own heartbeat introduces visible shake. The stabilization is impressive for what it is, but the laws of physics don't negotiate. If you want sharp images at full zoom, you need a tripod or at minimum a monopod. Nikon even built a dedicated snapback zoom button on the lens barrel. You press it, the lens zooms out briefly so you can find your subject, then release, and it snaps back to your previous focal length. That feature exists because at 3,000 millimeters, you literally lose track of where you're pointing.
Which is both a brilliant piece of user experience design and a quiet admission that the zoom range has exceeded what human arms can manage.
This connects to something Daniel hinted at, the appeal of not needing to accessorize with a big lens. A bridge camera replaces a backpack full of glass with one integrated system, possibly a remote shutter release, maybe a gimbal head for smooth panning. The lens is integrated, but the support system isn't.
You've traded the big lens problem for the tripod problem, which, to be fair, is a lighter and cheaper problem to have.
A solid tripod for the P1000 costs $150. The lens you'd need to match its reach on a full-frame system doesn't exist, and if it did, it would cost more than a used sedan.
Let's talk about the digital zoom thing, because this is where manufacturers get sneaky. The P1000 advertises 250 times zoom, but that's digital. The optical zoom is 125 times. What's actually happening when you push past optical into digital?
Digital zoom is cropping. The camera takes the center portion of the sensor image and enlarges it to fill the frame. At 250 times, you're using roughly 1/4 of the sensor's pixels and then upscaling. You lose resolution, you amplify noise, you introduce upscaling artifacts. It's the same thing as shooting at full optical zoom and cropping in post, except the camera does it for you and usually does it worse than software on your computer would.
If someone buys a PT1000 and thinks they're getting 250 times usable zoom, they're going to be disappointed.
They're going to get mush. The 125x optical is the real lens. Everything beyond that is marketing math. And this matters because some bridge cameras advertise their digital zoom number more prominently than the optical one. Always check the optical spec.
The optical number tells you what the glass can actually resolve. The digital number tells you what the marketing department thought would sell.
We've mapped the technical compromises. Now the question that actually matters for Daniel's use case, do bridge cameras make good video cameras? The answer is, it depends entirely on what you're filming. The P1000 shoots 4K at 30 frames per second, which sounds competitive. But there's that 1.5x crop factor I mentioned. Your 3000mm equivalent becomes 4500mm.
4500! At that point, you're not framing a bird. You're framing the bird's left eye and hoping it blinks.
That's the double-edged sword. For distant static subjects, a nest, the moon, a mountain peak, the reach is unreal. You can fill the frame with something a quarter mile away. But for tracking moving wildlife, the narrow field of view becomes a liability. A hawk circling overhead at 4500mm equivalent is nearly impossible to keep in frame. The slightest pan movement sends you into the next county.
Plus rolling shutter, I assume. Small sensor, electronic shutter readout.
Significant rolling shutter. Fast pans make vertical lines lean like they're in a wind tunnel. It's not a video-first camera. The RX10 Mark IV handles video much better. It shoots 4K with full pixel readout, no crop, and the phase detect autofocus works during video recording. It also does slow motion at absurd frame rates, 960 frames per second at reduced resolution.
960. So a hummingbird's wings become a slow ballet instead of a blur.
The P1000 tops out at 120 frames per second in 1080p, which is fine for casual slow motion but nowhere near that level. If video is the priority, the Sony is the bridge camera to get, but it only reaches 600mm. You're trading reach for video quality.
Which is the whole story of this category. Every decision is a trade between reach and everything else. So let's put a real scenario on the table. Daniel mentioned shooting natural views and wildlife. Say you're at a marsh, and there's a bald eagle nest 200 meters away. What does each approach actually cost you?
Let's run the numbers. A Sony A1 with a 600mm f4.4mm lens, that's about $18,000, and the lens alone weighs 6.5 pounds. With a 1.4x teleconverter, you get to 840mm. You'd still need to crop significantly to match the framing the P1000 gives you natively at 2000 or 3000mm. So you're spending 18 grand, and you still might not fill the frame.
Versus the P1000 at $1,000 new, 700 or 800 used. You fill the frame at 200 meters. You can count the eagle's eyelashes.
In good light, yes. And that cost difference isn't just about money, it's about who gets to participate. A retired birder on a fixed income can afford a P1000. They cannot afford an A1 and a 600-4. The bridge camera democratizes extreme telephoto in a way that the interchangeable lens world simply doesn't.
There's another angle here that doesn't show up on spec sheets. The integrated lens means the sensor is sealed inside the optical path forever. You never expose it to the elements. For someone shooting in a desert, on a beach, in a dusty canyon, no sensor dust, no panic when the wind kicks up or you're swapping a lens.
That's underrated. I've ruined shots because I changed lenses in the field and a single speck of dust landed on the sensor. With a bridge camera, that problem doesn't exist. The entire optical assembly is a sealed unit. For nature photographers working in challenging environments, that's not a convenience, it's peace of mind.
Where does the category stand right now? Canon and Panasonic have both exited the bridge camera market entirely. Nikon hasn't updated the P1000 since 2018. Sony's RX10 Mark IV is from 2017. The category looks, from the outside, like it's dying.
Shrinking, not dying. The low-end, 20x zoom, small sensor has been obliterated by smartphones. A current flagship phone with a periscope zoom can do 10x optical and computational tricks to push further. There's no reason to buy a bridge camera that only does 20 or 30x zoom. But the extreme end, 60x, 80x, 125x, that's defensible because physics won't let you put a 3000mm equivalent lens in a phone. The glass has to be physically large. The P1000's lens barrel is the size of a soda can for a reason.
The category survives on niche demand from birders, astrophotographers, and people who need extreme reach and can't spend five figures to get it.
Those niches are real. Birding alone is a massive global hobby. Astrophotography has exploded with the rise of affordable tracking mounts. The P1000 has a devoted following. Forums, YouTube channels, entire communities built around moonshots and planetary imaging with this one camera. Nikon keeps manufacturing it 8 years later because people keep buying it. The category isn't growing, but it has found its floor.
Which brings us to the practical question Daniel's really asking. When should someone actually buy one of these?
Here's the decision framework. Buy a bridge camera if your primary need is extreme reach, 600 millimeters equivalent and beyond, and you're shooting mostly in good light. If you value portability over ultimate image quality and you don't want to manage a lens collection, this is your tool.
Don't buy one if you're regularly shooting at dawn or dusk in low light, if you need fast autofocus for action or sports, if you want shallow depth of field for portraits, or if you plan to build out a system over time. A bridge camera is a destination, not a stepping stone. You can't grow it.
For video specifically, bridge cameras excel at distant static subjects, nest cameras, moon time lapses, a mountain range at sunrise, but tracking moving wildlife at extreme focal lengths is punishing. The autofocus hunts, the crop factor narrows your field of view to a pinhole, and rolling shutter turns pans into jelly. If your video work is mostly tripod locked and the subject isn't sprinting, they're usable. Otherwise, you'll fight the camera constantly.
The practical recommendation, if Daniel or anyone listening is a birder or wildlife enthusiast on a budget, a used Nikon P900 runs about $300 to $400. A used P1000, $700 to $800. Both are fantastic entry points for extreme reach. If you can stretch further, the Sony RX10 Mark IV at around $1,500 trades, some zoom range for a much better sensor, vastly superior autofocus, and capable video.
The Sony only gets you to 600 millimeters, but those 600 are cleaner, faster, and more flexible. The Nikon gets you to 3,000. That's the fork in the road, and which path you take depends entirely on whether your priority is reach or image quality. There's no wrong answer. Just the wrong tool for your specific situation.
The bigger question is whether this category has a future at all. Samsung's putting 10 times optical periscope zooms in phones now. Computational photography is filling gaps that used to require glass. How long before the 60 to 125 times zoom range is the only thing bridge cameras have left? And the market for that gets too small to sustain even one manufacturer.
The physics argument says the bridge camera's extreme end is safe. You cannot put a 3,000mm equivalent lens in a phone. It's not a sensor problem, it's a glass problem. The P1000's lens barrel is physically large because the aperture at full zoom, f8 at 539mm actual focal length, requires a front element of a certain diameter. Light gathering is geometry. You can't compute your way out of the aperture equation.
The market argument is less comfortable. If the only defensible territory is the extreme fringe, 80 times zoom and beyond, how many people actually need that? Birders, astrophotographers, a handful of surveillance applications. It's a real niche, but it's a small one.
The manufacturers seem to agree. Canon and Panasonic walked away. Nikon's P1000 is 8 years old with no successor. Sony's RX10 line hasn't seen a Mark V. The engineering question I keep coming back to is whether you could build a bridge camera with a 1-inch sensor and, say, 50 times zoom. That would be a compelling sweet spot. Better low light, better dynamic range, still enough reach for most wildlife.
The lens would be enormous. The P1000 already has a Sotocam barrel with a 1 over 2.3-inch sensor. Scale the sensor up 4 times and try to keep a 50 times zoom range. The glass required to project that image circle would be, what, the size of a 2-liter bottle?
You're fighting the lens equation directly. Focal length, aperture, image circle. Pick two, and the third is determined. A 1-inch sensor with a 50 times zoom and a usable aperture at the long end would require a front element so large it would defeat the portability argument that makes bridge cameras appealing in the first place.
There's a hard physical ceiling. The P-1000 is already pushing against it, which means the category might not evolve so much as persist, serving the same niche with the same basic formula until the manufacturing lines finally stop.
That's not necessarily a sad story. Some tools don't need to evolve. They just need to keep existing for the people who depend on them. The P-1000 is still being made because people are still buying it. As long as there are birders who want to photograph a kestrel from 300 meters without spending a car's worth of glass, there's a market.
I think that's the thing Daniel's question ultimately points toward. Bridge cameras are a reminder that the best tool isn't always the most advanced one, or the most flexible one. Sometimes it's the one that removes the friction of decision-making. No lens swaps, no should I bring the 400mm, no sensor cleaning in the field. Just one integrated system that does one thing extremely well, within its limits, and gets out of your way.
That's a philosophy of tool choice that applies way beyond cameras. The thing that's optimized for everything is rarely the thing that's best at the one thing you actually need to do.
The bridge camera survives, not as the future of photography, but as a specialized instrument for a specific kind of shooter. And if you're that shooter, nothing else comes close for the money.
Now, Hilbert's daily fun fact.
During the Cold War, a small workshop in Hokkaido produced cooking pots from polished obsidian that were so optically flat they could reflect a readable image of the moon on a clear night, though they cracked if heated above a simmer.
Right. This has been My Weird Prompts. If you enjoyed this episode, tell someone who's ever tried to photograph a bird from way too far away. You can find every episode at myweirdprompts.com or email the show at show@myweirdprompts.com. We'll be back soon.
This episode's script was written by DeepSeek V4 Pro, with text-to-speech by Chatterbox.
Thanks for listening to our show, My Weird Prompts, where odd thoughts go. From sloth's slow takes to facts on cue, we chase the strange and follow through. Some nights it's news, some nights it's lore, a thought you've never heard before. The host dig in, the host dig deep, the stranger the prompt, the less they sleep. From tiny questions, big ones too, from half-formed hunches to deja vu. If something odd is in your head, send it in, we'll chase the thread. My weird prompts, that's the close, from sloth, from man, from long ear. Stay curious, keep weird in mind.